Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top quality combat sport equipment, tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farm Box Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.
Greetings, fellow humans. Welcome to the BS Show, the one, the only source for combat sports and mixed martial arts news in Atlantic Canada. I am your host, Boyd Sharp, and I am joined, as always, although I didn't think it was going to happen tonight, by my partner in crime, Mr. Rick Trash Canyon Doyle. Rick, thanks for pulling yourself out of your sick bed and joining us tonight, brother.
Hey, buddy, it's always a pleasure, and yeah, I was a little down and out. I'm getting these little waves of nausea that come over me. They'd probably kill a normal human being, I'll be honest, but, you know, I seem to be fighting it off.
I'm glad to hear that your superpowers are getting you through. You haven't taken any shots to the head, can't attribute it to that, not back training yet?
No, not at all. No, just I've got a few irons in the fire, so I'm doing a little bit of everything, but nothing specific right now. How about you?
Cool. I am on the road for 2 weeks for my ever-important day job, so that's eating up all my time for the next couple of weeks. Right now, I tell you, brother, right now, I am not too far from your homeland. I am in Wolfville, Nova Scotia.
Oh, you're down in the valley.
I am down the valley. If I got here an hour or so earlier, I would have busted out to Port Williams and visited the guys at Abaya.
Absolutely. Don't make a man of you. Somebody's got to. I'm glad you're down in my little stomping grounds, buddy. That's what they say, men are men. That's where the men are men and the sheep are nervous. Watch yourself.
I heard that. I've been sticking to my hotel room just for safety. Listen, I got to tell you, man, I haven't had a whole lot of time to follow what's been going on in this area for combat sports in the past couple of weeks, but there's something that I simply can't ignore. And that's this Submission Series 902 event that's taking place in New Glasgow, January 23rd, I think it is. That thing is catching on fire. Those guys are getting so much attention for that event. And I went to the trouble of finding out a little bit more about it. So it turns out this is not a tournament where sort of like hundreds of people show up and kids compete and you go along more for the competition than the viewing. This is like a Metamoris-style competition where they're going to bring in world-class grapplers, and people will just go and pay, I think it's $35 for a ticket maybe, and watch the show. And the headliner is a Titans guy, actually. Kyle Sanford is fighting the 2014 middleweight no-gi world champion. His last name is Santava. I haven't had a chance to do any research on him yet. But that's a huge, huge, huge fight for Kyle Sanford, who just went down to New York and got his black belt from Henzo.
Yeah, so how many fights are they looking at having? Have you heard that yet?
I think there's going to be somewhere between maybe 8 and a dozen, I think. I know Josh Presley is fighting another world-class competitor, Alessandro Rahman. Kent Peters from Zombie Proof, the head instructor at Zombie Proof, is fighting Gavin Tucker. That's actually a really good point, because that's for Nova Scotia, that is really, really a cool match. They're both purple belts. They both have a really, really good reputation. But also, Scott Noss, who trains out of Truro and Halifax, is fighting Dana Dickinson. So Dana Dickinson and Kent Peters both own Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and MMA gyms. And I think this is a really, really good thing to point out, that these guys, even though they own martial arts gyms, are putting themselves out there, and they're going to compete on a stage that lets everybody see their skills. Because martial arts instructors or senseis or whatever you call them have always taken flack for. They kind of hide in their dojo and they do their thing and everyone's expected to follow them, but they never ever put their money where their mouth is and get out there and show what they can do. And both Dana Dickinson and Ken Peters are stepping up, and they're going to compete in this tournament for everyone to see. And I think that's absolutely fantastic for them.
Yeah, and I don't see it, Boyd, as putting their money where their mouth is kind of thing. These are truly true competitors, and they enjoy the sport. And, you know, they'll go out, and they're going to have an epic match. And I don't think there's an ego involved here. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just going out, they're going to compete. If they win or if they lose, it's not really going to matter because the respect, they're not going to lose any respect. And this is awesome to see. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. I'm sure there is ego involved because that's kind of why you compete in the first place is to prove that you're better than the other guy. But I do agree that nobody's going to lose respect, and these guys are actually going to earn a great deal of respect as a result of doing this, because it kind of goes back to the old, like I said, you had the Kung Fu masters who everyone just kind of said, oh, he's the greatest. And, oh, what has he done? Well, I don't know. He hasn't done anything, but I'm pretty sure he's the greatest just because he told me he is. Well, these guys are actually going to step in and compete against somebody and show what they can, what they can't do, who's the best on that particular day. And I think it's a cool indication of the evolution of martial arts as a sport and as a competition, as well as its more traditional incarnation as an art.
And the other thing I'm digging on this, Boyd, I swung by the gym the other day, and I was talking to Joel Jacquard, and Derek Clark was there. And, I mean, this thing is getting legs. And for years we've seen MMA be on the stage. You know what I'm saying? They're the one in front of the big crowd, and all of a sudden we've got an opportunity now. These guys are going out. They're going to do a jiu-jitsu tournament, and the general public seems very, very interested in it, and I'm so happy for that.
Yeah, well, and you're 100% right about it having legs. As a matter of fact, Skippy, producer for this show, just sent me a quick text, and he said, Madhouse actually has the submission series organizers on a show on Wednesday night on the MMA Madhouse Network. So,
oh, really?
I do know. Yeah. Jump in, Skip. Yeah. Let us know. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Who do you have? Skip, who do you have coming on your show?
We're going to be sitting down on Wednesday with Derek from the event. Well, it just worked out this way. For the first 30, 40 minutes, we're going to sit down, break down the events, the rules, how it's going to play out, and not just this event, but the two others they have planned for 2015. And then we've got Machado, Vancouver's newest location owner and BJJ phenom and legend in MMA, Rex Payne. He'll be finishing the show. So it's an all BJJ show. But we're going to be talking with the guys from 902 Submission to try to help get their event out there, because I think the concept is beautiful. It's done rarely in the States, but it is done, but not enough.
Well, do me a favor. Skip, when that show is done, can you throw a link to that show up on the BS Show Facebook page? And we'll pump it out on Twitter and Facebook as well. I look forward to hearing that one. We're going to start having those guys on after the event that we're going to be promoting tonight and next week, which is the Fight First Amateur MMA and Professional Muay Thai event. We want to promote that one for the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to start bringing on some of these guys who are on this submission-only card in New Glasgow. And I know these guys, they've already announced they're going to be on three radio shows, I think, in the next couple of days, as far west as Toronto. Which is another indication that this really is catching people's attention. And there was so much Twitter about it on social media. I actually texted the guys and asked if we could get press passes, because I was afraid we weren't going to be able to get a ticket to the damn thing, because we were talking about going up there. So he said, no problem. We'll be able to get in there, press row. And after I got that, Carl from Madhouse, the Madman, reached out and asked if we would actually do some coverage of the event for Madhouse. So we'll chat with those guys and see if we can't get them some quick results and some coverage of the event when we head up there.
Yeah, I'm excited, Boyd. I really am. Like I say, I was speaking with Derek at the gym, and he's very pleased with the public reaction that he's getting. I think it's exciting. You know, the average everyday Joe may not be able to relate to the point system in the actual purest technical part of BJJ, but the average everyday guy is going to be able to relate to those submissions, and it's a perfect example of bringing a little bit of entertainment in to get that mainstream crowd in.
Cool. Well, sorry, excuse me. I'm just reading a message from Skippy here who says he's just contacted our first guest, Peter Martel, and it looks like we're going to voicemail. So I'm going to try to reach. yeah, this is a bit
of a trend. Are
you
really surprised with that?
No, I'm not surprised. I think it happened the last time we tried getting him on too. I'm going to try sending him a text here.
All right.
Give me a quick second.
While we just got a little bit of dead air, there's been some exciting things this week. You know, of course, we had a probe land on a comet. I mean, seriously, folks, what a week. This is one to remember. This is man on the moon kind of shit, times 10. They landed a probe on a moving comet that was five times as far away as the Earth is to the sun. 10 years ago, they launched this thing. Like, this is big news. What a week.
Okay. Are you sure this is not like the moon landing and it's just like some soundstage in Vermont somewhere?
Listen, man, don't even get me started on that because that didn't happen, okay?
Okay, I gotta ask you about something, Rick.
Yeah.
I jumped on Facebook the other day, and I am getting bombarded with a sort of Photoshopped image of you and Lincoln Steen. Are you wrestling again? Is this something like a blast from the past, or are you kind of strapping on the boots and the spandex and crawling under the rope again?
Well, a little bit. I mean, I told you that before. I mean, after the fight there, I was on a 3-month suspension, and really I needed a little bit of time away as well. And so I just kind of used a bit of cross promotion between I took my MMA, you know, skills or background or whatever you want to call it. And I kind of brought that back into wrestling and put a little bit of, you know, my character into it. And I've got quite a bit of work. So, yeah, there's a big show coming up this week on the 21st at the Halifax Forum. And they're bringing in Bobby Roode, which is the TNA champion. And he's been down here years ago, a good friend of mine. It's going to be a big show. So, yeah, I jumped on board. It's a lot of fun. And a lot of the guys from the gym, they dig wrestling. They dig what I do. So I appreciate their support. Seeing them there, too, it's cool, man.
Awesome. Okay, I had another question for you. It's a comment. I heard, and I'm wondering if you know anything about this, that the Dartmouth location for Fit Plus had to shut down temporarily just last week or the week before. Do you know anything about that?
Not really. I know that it happened, so I have no idea what happened. I know, and we were hoping to get Scott McLean on the show tonight, but I don't think we've been able to contact him tonight either. But I know that they had to shut down and move immediately, and for whatever reason. You know, we kind of expected seeing the talent coming out of Fit Plus that they may do an expansion at some point, but this seemed immediate, so obviously something came up.
Cool, yeah. Well, I'm guessing it had to do with something with the state of the building or something like that, because those guys got a lot on their plate these days. I'm sure that they're not all over in their Halifax location, or maybe they are. Scott did send me a quick text, and he said they were really close to announcing the new location. It was going to be real close to the previous location, I think maybe in a strip mall or an area that was getting a little more foot traffic. But we should try to get him on as soon as they have the new location secured so that they can tell people where to find them, because it would be a real shame for that gym to lose even a quarter of a step, considering the momentum they have now with Chris Kalides having his next fight announced. Did you hear that, by the way? Valentine's
No.
Day.
No,
yeah,
I hadn't heard
he's
it.
Fighting. I believe in Colorado is going to be his next shot. So exciting stuff for him. I know he's just back from a vacation to places much warmer than what we have here in Halifax, Nova Scotia right now. And I'm assuming this is going to be pretty much the end of his downtime, and he'll be throwing himself full-fledged into a new camp, possibly in a new location.
So what's the date set for that?
I believe it's Valentine's. I believe it's February 14th.
Yeah, so he'll be starting a camp right away then, I would think.
Yeah.
So what's on for tonight's show? What's the battle plan here?
The battle plan for tonight was, and we're having trouble getting a hold of Mr. Peter Martel, was to talk about the Fight First card coming up on November 28th in Halifax, Nova Scotia at the Olympic Forum, at the Olympic Hall. We were going to talk to Pete a little bit about who was on the card, what the rules and the regulations are around the amateur MMA versus the pro MMA, and for the first time seeing Muay Thai in Nova Scotia, what rules were going to be governing those events competitions. We were then going to invite in crew Brian Jones Jr., a good friend of Skippy's, who was going to give us a little bit of information on the difference between the different styles of, say, Muay Thai versus American kickboxing, because I really know absolutely nothing about boxing, and I'm only just learning this now, which is sort of the American term for the sort of the fist, feet, knee, elbow style of fighting that came out of Asia. The term kickboxing apparently has only been around really since the 60s and the 70s, even though Muay Thai, for example, has been around for like 1,000 years. So, I was excited about getting some more information on that.
Yeah, and apparently we do have a history of kickboxing here, although, I mean, I wasn't around it at all. But I remember in my conversations with Ray McKinnon that they were doing it, I believe, in the 80s. They were doing it in the like the Halifax Forum and whatnot. Have you ever heard of any of those?
I mean, that way predates my time, but I know, for example, that Ralph Hollett was into kickboxing, and that would have been in the probably early 80s. So certainly if he was training in kickboxing at a high level, then it was certainly at a certain level of maturity in Atlantic Canada. But Ray McKinnon would probably be the dude to talk to about the history of that.
You know, Hollett, man, what a name from this area. I mean, an absolute legend in boxing. And, you know, I guess he was kind of out of it before we came into it, Boyd, but you know, he was making a move into MMA, and I mean, his sons are absolute beasts. I'd fucking love to see Roger Hollett come back to Halifax and do another fight. I hope that happens someday. I really do.
You know, I was wondering about that just the other day because, I mean, Roger probably had more steam behind him than just about any other mixed martial artist to come out of Atlantic Canada. He had a lackluster showing in the UFC, and then he's disappeared from, say, the general eye. I'm sure the guys who know him best know what he's doing and what he's up to. But I'd really like to talk to maybe Jerome and a few more of the guys that are close to him to find out where his head is and maybe find out if he does plan on getting back in there again, because it really would be a shame for him to step away at this point if he still has the desire to do it, because you're right. I mean, if we're looking at local mixed martial arts, there would be an awful lot of people who would like to see that. And going back to his dad for a minute, I had the good fortune to meet him on a couple of occasions before he passed. And one of those occasions was a fundraiser that was being held for him when he was in the quite late stages of brain cancer. And it was just incredible to be down there and see the old school boxing guys and the old kickboxers and the people who'd followed him all the way through his career into his Canadian title. And it was just phenomenal to see the amount of support that there was for him. And the name Hollett just carries so much weight in the fight world that it would be fantastic to see Roger back for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, from my, you know, the kind of thing that interests me, I mean, Ralph was obviously a prize fighter, and he's in the Hall of Fame here in Nova Scotia. But, you know, he was a known bouncer too, man. Like, he worked a lot of bars in downtown Halifax. He was just a guy that you didn't mess with. Everybody knew the name. And, to me, that I kind of dig that, right? And I ran into Roger a little over a month ago, about a month and a half ago. I dropped in the Forza one day, and he was in there. And I thought he was out west, and he is. He's working out there, but he just comes home, and he does some training here at Forza when he comes in. And I asked him, I said, man, are we ever going to see you back here? And he just said, the worst of it is there's not enough money. You know, when you get that good paying job, there's really not enough on the local circuit to bring you out of leaving that good job and having a training camp. I can understand that, but it's a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe he's just past that, and it's time to look at something else. But I, for one, would love to see him back in the cage.
Well, he put a lot of asses in the seats because that guy's a beast, man. Like, he just hit so hard. I mean, even Coach Martel told me, he said, did you ever get hit by Roger? And I said, no. He said, if you get hit by Roger, your whole head, you know, just throbs. He said, it feels like your whole head explodes when he hits you.
Yeah, I remember Mike Kent saying one time that when he sparred with Roger, 30 seconds into the round, he was completely exhausted because you spent the whole round basically clenched in terror, exhausting yourself and just afraid for what was going to happen next. So, yeah, a dude with that kind of, whether it's learned or natural or genetic hitting power, is somebody that people are always going to want to show up and see.
And he did really well in Bellator.
Yeah.
I mean, he was walking through Bellator. And then just for some whatever reason, just didn't have a good showing in the UFC, and then it was over, and it's too bad. It's too bad.
Skippy, do we have you? Are you alive?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to get a hold of both guys. I'm assuming Brian's still in class. That's what I'm assuming. He's in the middle of teaching class. I originally told him 6:30 West Coast time, so that's seven minutes away. Yeah, and I still keep trying Peter's number, but it just goes straight to that great voicemail of his.
Are you getting his voicemail on both those numbers?
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I think I want him to cut my voicemail for me. I'm going to have to offer him some money to make me a voicemail.
This is the beauties of live radio, you know. Like, we had three guests lined up and haven't been able to get a hold of any of them. We're not exactly David Letterman, you know that.
Well,
yeah, this is true.
I did send you guys a link to the fight card. It does list all the fights, including the title fight, and it breaks it down for you guys from MMA and Muay Thai, so you know.
Okay, well, just give me a second here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to leave to you Yahoos to chat for a minute, and I'm going to send Peter a text. So,
okay.
I'll be right back.
So, I'll tell you what
are we going to talk about?
What we're going to talk about is the amazing weekend of fights that went down. I got to tell you what, Joe Schilling, kickboxing Muay Thai legend, took on another kickboxing Muay Thai legend in Melvin Manhoef. At Bellator, and good night, Irene. Did he fold him like a lawn chair, dude? The old man came back in round two, 30 seconds into it, and just hit him so hard he didn't even remember walking to the cage.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah, he was all upset.
Where was that fight located?
That was at the Bellator event down in California.
Yeah. So, now how many people would they draw in for an event like that?
Oh, that event, because Tito Ortiz and Stefan Bonner were at it, I bet you they got 18,000 to 20,000 through the door.
Is that right?
I would hope so.
Now, are those guys traveling around a lot, or are they just going to base out of that area?
Well, Bellator's still going to travel. I just don't think they're going to be doing as much smaller shows and smaller venues as they used to. With the whole new regime there and the new push, I personally think that them going down to 12 to 15 cards a year is good. I know the UFC announced today 42 new events for next year. That's just too many.
Yeah. Now, when Bellator goes on the road, Are they putting local fighters on their cards, or are they only just booking the ones they have under contract?
The old regime, yes, like 60% of the card would be local regional fighters, and I know a few fighters who fought on Bellator cards just for ticket sales. So they've offered the a lot of up and coming fighters a chance to at least get seen, maybe not
isn't
paid.
Isn't that illegal? Aren't you not allowed to pay your fighter in ticket sales that they make?
No, actually,
so
you're
talking
why
they,
not?
Get a, they get a cut of all ticket sales, or are you talking they only get the money, a percentage of the tickets that they sell?
The percentage of the tickets they sell. So let's say the tickets are $35. You sell 100 tickets. They're going to give you maybe $20 of that on the ticket sales, you know, at high end.
Well,
so
for some reason, I thought that was a no-no.
It is amateur. Only as an amateur.
Okay.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's bullshit anyway, man. These guys got money. What are they worrying about ticket sales for? Pay the guys. That's ridiculous.
So that's the big issue, Rick, is too many promoters are like, any way I can cut costs to make me more money, I'm going to do. I've seen promoters throw guys off cards because he's like, you didn't sell enough tickets. We actually interviewed a promoter who had a fighter who was fighting for him because he'd left a previous promotion because the promoter came to his work and put a pistol in his mouth and demanded more money for the ticket sales. He said, look, you only sold $600 worth. He goes, I told you I needed $1,000, so you give me $1,000 or I blow your head off. And he pistol whipped the kid. And the kid said, I'm done, I'm out, I'm never fighting for this guy, going near him, nothing. You know, so it all depends, man. I mean, you got promoters out there who are honest and hardworking and care about the sport like Peter, and you got guys out there who are pulling pistols on fighters to get paid.
Yeah, that's unbelievable, brother. I mean, who owns Bellator?
Bellator is owned by Viacom. Now, that is the key here. Viacom has a bigger war chest than Zuffa LLC and a bigger war chest than anybody else out there. They should be dipping into that, and they did with the Tito Ortiz, Stefan Bonner. They paid Tito $300,000, and they paid Stefan Bonner $100,000. But I disagree. That money should have been allotted to the undercard and the guys coming up, the co-main like Will Brooks and Chandler, when they fought. That was a great, beautiful fight in the rematch for the title. Again, beautiful fight. I think those guys should have been getting $100,000.
Exactly my point. That's what it just seems so bush league that they're and they're pistol whipping their guys. They're putting guys on a roster instead of promoting the local guys and giving them a good paycheck, nickel and diming them. That's ridiculous. If you don't have enough money to put on a show and pay the guys properly, get out of the business. That's ridiculous. That's embarrassing.
We have what I call like trash MMA or, black market MMA, some people call it. These unregulated shows they're unregulated shows that go to mostly Indian reservations where they don't have to have sanctioning. They don't have to have medical doctors. They don't have to have ambulances. They don't have to have insurance. And what they can do is they usually get predominant fighters to fight for ticket sales. They give all the alcohol sales to the casino. The casino covers the main event fighters and pays X amount to the promotion, and then he cleans up on sponsorship. So, I mean, some of these guys can pull 10, 15 grand profit from a show like that, but one kid gets hurt, and he could be paralyzed, broken arm for the rest of his life, all kinds of things, and there's no recovery, recourse, or any damage.
You saw what happened. Yeah. You saw what happened just yesterday, right? Rick's probably unaware.
No, I'm not unaware.
Oh, you're familiar with the young guy. The young guy who basically died on the stool.
Yes, absolutely, and a perfect example. They didn't have doctors there. They didn't have an ambulance there. Any of that kind of stuff.
I think they did have a doctor. It's just that they kept making the wrong decisions when.
But that's the thing.
Let's break it down. Let's break down the facts a little bit here, because people listening might not know what we're talking about. So this young fighter, he was fighting on a Muay Thai promotion. He got hit pretty hard several times in the first round, enough that he wasn't looking like the same fighter at all. He was crossing his feet. He was stumbling. He wasn't able to remain upright on his stool in the corner. He got sent back out for the second round. Much more of the same, came back in, wasn't really able to hold himself up at all. Got seen by the doctors and got thrown right back in there again. When the fight was over, there was some discussion on whether or not he had to go to the hospital in an ambulance, and it was decided that no, he could just go to a clinic, and by the time they got him there, the brain damage was too severe and he died. That's the basic facts, right?
Yes. Now, I just want to point out one thing. The ringside doctor had a degree in emergency medicine and worked at a testosterone anti-aging clinic. Now, that word right there, doctor, is thrown around too easily, because that degree in emergency medicine could be a 2-year associate's degree from a private college. That does not make you a doctor.
Okay, here's my 2 cents worth on this, because I dealt with this and not so severe, but it can be in pro wrestling, and it's called backyard wrestling. And this is no different the way I look at it. If you step into an unsanctioned cage and fight, you're a fucking embarrassment. I don't care who you are. You're an embarrassment to a sport that you pretend to love, because every time you do that, you put everybody at risk. And as far as I'm concerned, anybody that holds an event like that, if somebody gets hurt, they should be held responsible. They know what the rules are. They know that it's illegal to hold those things. And if somebody gets hurt or somebody gets killed, they should be charged with manslaughter. Plain and simple.
I agree. I agree.
Sorry, go ahead, Skip.
I'm going to just jump in. We're going to stop that conversation because we're going to switch it to the Muay Thai conversation and break that down. Folks, especially you in Canada, anybody out there who doesn't know who this gentleman is about to meet him. And this guy has one of the biggest passions for combat sports ever, especially Muay Thai. What he has done and what he has gone through in his career to get where he is today as a fighter and a promoter is just insane. And I would like to welcome Crew Brian Jones Jr. to the show.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us. Skippy assured us you were coming probably straight from class. Is that not true?
That is correct. Just got done training some fighters.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, because like I said on this show last week, until very, very recently, I thought Muay Thai was a drink that you drank on the beach somewhere warm. So I need you to help me out a little bit, and Skippy assures me that you're the guy to do it. Can you break down for the lay person, the person who's just really getting into watching or training or viewing regional combat sports, what is the difference between what somebody would call kickboxing and Muay Thai?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So without going too far into detail, essentially what Muay Thai is the more traditional style kickboxing and martial art from Thailand. Burma, northeast of Thailand, was also had a type of Muay Thai, or Muay Bran is another level in style. Basically what Muay Thai comes down to for everybody, and again without going too far into detail, is kickboxing as we all know it, with knees and elbows. I mean, there are some different details and different rules here, there, and the other, but for the most part, it's kickboxing, and you add knees and you add elbows.
So if you were in, a kickboxing match, traditional North American-style kickboxing that was popular, say, 15, 20 years ago, no knees, no elbows, it's kind of like karate, taekwondo, boxing,
yeah,
those type
I mean,
of skills thrown in with no knees and elbows.
Exactly. Depending on, obviously, the fighter and their exact bringing upbringing, but for the most part, that's kicking and boxing, and Muay Thai adds the knees and the elbows, and there are some takedowns as well, but they are specific. There are rules to that, and so on and so forth.
That's exactly what I was going to ask, because my understanding is Muay Thai actually has, is it grappling? Is that the right word? Because you don't actually go to the ground with your opponent, but you can throw your opponent or trip your opponent, correct?
In a matter of speaking, yes, you can. I wouldn't use the word trip because you actually can't physically hook and trip. It's more utilizing the foot, per se, right behind the other person, using the hips to throw it. You cannot make your opponent physically go north and south. And when I say that, what I mean is head down and feet up.
Like a
so
judo
you can throw
them.
Like a judo throw, exactly. So that's where some of the throws come, get a little bit more difficult, because you get a lot of MMA guys that cross over to Muay Thai or that try Muay Thai fights, and these guys do just that. The big thing is no north and south or even anywhere close to that, really. And you can throw them. And so I think you're thinking about the clinch work, and that's where the throws come into play. Now, there are some other details that come into play. When an opponent throws his or her opponent to the ground or throws them, you can re-throw. And the person really essentially kind of opposite of what you said a few minutes ago, but the person who really ends up on the top is really the one who gets the points when you're involving throwing and re-throwing the each other.
So there is a bit of a scramble sort of on the way down.
Correct, there can be. Now, then there's the dirty ball game, and you got to be careful because this is when you know, if a strike is on its way, it is a legal shot because you cannot knee, kick, punch anybody on a downed opponent. And much like MMA, anything touching the ground besides the bottom of their feet is a downed opponent. But if there's a throw and the person is throwing the strike as they are going down, it is legal to land.
Okay, your knowledge here is kind of blowing my mind. We got to take a step back here and do something we probably should have done at the beginning of this conversation. Tell us a little bit about how you got into this world and what you did in this world and what you're doing right now in the world of combat sports.
Absolutely, I appreciate the time. Many, many years ago, I'm an old guy now. Back in the 90s, I was doing Taekwondo, searching for to continue my Taekwondo education. I ran across a wonderful Muay Thai martial artist crew, Alberto Ramirez. He currently owns Chai Sai Muay Thai, and I have to give props to him. He's amazing. He trained under Master Tati in Las Vegas, who is now back in Thailand. And at first, I didn't know what Muay Thai was. I just wanted, he was Crew Alberto Ramirez was the 88 Seoul Korea gold medalist in Taekwondo, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna try this Muay Thai, whatever that is, and then if it doesn't work for me, I'll move on to have him teach me Taekwondo or continue my education. And I fell in love with it when I saw the first fight, and so I started competing, not taking it very seriously, but enjoyed it, and I found myself undefeated and then a few titles in, and I thought, well, I got to keep riding this wave. And I really fell in love with the sport. And there's a lot of very honorable, wonderful people in the sport. I've done most of my fighting here on the West Coast, whether it be Canada, California, Las Vegas, and so on and so forth. But there's just some great the camaraderie for the sport. And it wasn't really known back when I was going. I mean, kickboxing was known. And who would have known MMA blew up? I mean, it was Pancration back in the day. And I thought, well, that's why I'm going to stick with Muay Thai, because the fans love it, too. They love to see the strikes and stuff. So I stuck with it.
Continue. I want to throw something in there when you're finished.
I got old and broken. Blew my knee out and found out I had thin retinas, and I was so I have to be careful with detached retina. And so I hung up the competition gloves, started coaching. I was always coaching, but really took coaching a lot more seriously and started promoting in the last couple of years. And I just love the sport. I love everything about it.
Okay, so I got a couple of questions for you here, and my partner Rick does as well.
Sure.
We live quite a ways from you. We're on the extreme east coast of Canada in Nova Scotia, and on November 28th, we are about to have our first ever Muay Thai in this province. And
congratulations.
There is quite, yeah, thank you very much. There is quite a bit of buzz around that. So I wanted to ask you, what is it that connects with audiences? Why do you think it's becoming more popular? And what is it that's made you fall so in love with it? Like, what can we expect for people to see and come away with when they see these sort of first two or three Muay Thai fights at the end of this month?
Well, I think they're going to be very impressed and very excited about the sportsmanship that is in this. I mean, the fighters, you know, most of the time, it's not a sparring match like a point sparring in Taekwondo. The guys are going after each other, so they're going to put it all out there, but they're going to do it with honor and respect. And there's, again, tradition and style to this. And realistically, they're not going to be just shooting from the third row, punching from the third row out. They're going to be timed chest match type fights. And that's what I think is part of the buzz is the chess match that goes on in there, much like MMA, but in a striking standpoint. Then you're also probably the other thing that creates the buzz is a lot of the MMA world and a lot of the combat sport world understands that Muay Thai is one of the most brutal sports out there when it comes to competition. So I think you throw all these things together and it creates a lot of buzz.
Well, I'm super excited. And another guy that's also excited is my partner on this show, Rick Trash Canyon Doyle. Rick was introduced to MMA and to Muay Thai and grappling just a couple of short years ago, like myself. Rick, do you want to jump in?
I'd absolutely love to. Thank you very much, crew, for coming on the show. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
I would like to jump back in the history of your sport a little bit, because that's what I find fascinating. Now, you mentioned Muay Thai. We all thought that came from just Thailand, but you also mentioned Burma as well.
That's correct. And I learned a lot more about basically how Thailand and Burma had political differences, and a lot of times that was handled in the ring. And I learned that because, again, going back to my original Muay Thai instructor, Alberto Ramirez, I was lucky to be one of the first Europeans to ever fight in Burma, because Thailand made it their what is baseball to the United States, football, soccer, et cetera, et cetera. What Thailand did was they built stadiums, Roger Dumner Stadium, the list goes on, and had these guys fighting for prizes and things of that nature, where Burma made it a little bit more of their secret squirrel, or their military and secret squirrel training. And they opened it up many years back now, but Alberto was one of the lucky people to fight over there, one of the first Europeans to ever fight over there. And it was a big deal. And there's a little stylistic difference, but the neat thing, though, is that's kind of where a lot of things started, but now Muay Thai is big in Germany and Australia, and the list goes on. So it's getting worldwide. It has been for a while.
Yeah,
Sorry, go ahead, Rick.
No, go ahead, Boyd. I'll follow up when you're done.
Okay, so you just made a good point. You mentioned a couple of European countries, and my exposure to sort of what I understood as Muay Thai was actually from the Netherlands, the kickboxing, because they too sort of have the kicks below the belt to the shins and leg kicks. Did the style of kickboxing that's been really popular in the Netherlands for a number of years derive directly from Thailand, or was that sort of an offshoot from something else that just evolved in parallel?
I think it was more an involvement. I mean, Muay Thai has definitely been around for ages, so I'm sure they stole some of the techniques and or adapted them to their style. You know, all of, as you know, martial arts and combat sports per se has been evolving over the years, and so there's a lot of marrying of one art to the next. I'm sure that's what it was about.
See, I find the evolution of this sport quite fascinating. Maybe most wouldn't, but from my understanding of it, and like I say, I was just under the impression that it came out of Thailand, But this sport has been, or this fighting style has been around for like a long time. And from what I understand, they developed it from fighting the Chinese or something, if I remember correct.
Yes. Again, it was more of a military action, Burma, Chinese, et cetera, et cetera. That is what, you know, it was more of a combat hand-to-hand style. But again, it became their national sport, if you will.
It's interesting that, you know, it developed in Burma as well. And we never really had a look at Burma because of their political situation. Most people weren't even aware of Burma, you know, until the Rocky movie or the Rambo movie came out, or the tsunami hit them and they refused foreign aid. So they were a fairly closed country. So we had no idea that it was developing there as well. Now, my understanding is in Thailand, and we've had some fighters from this area go, and I think that it's becoming, that trip to Thailand is becoming increasingly popular with fighters as they develop their skills. Is it something that you encourage as well, that they need to make that, you know, pilgrimage?
I would say definitely do it. The opportunity to take that and go train with some of the best, or pretty much the best of the best, by all means, I would take it. The training is second to none, and the knowledge, I mean, it blows my knowledge out of the water. These guys are phenomenal back there.
And I know Skippy is dying to jump into this conversation as well. You guys know each other quite well.
Yes.
Hey, Brian, you know, we're old friends. I love you to death like a big brother. Something I want you to touch on for the folks out there, because I'm not sure if this is going to happen at the event, but I think it's important to understand about Muay Thai fighting. Can you talk a little bit, not about the Y Crew, but about the actual round-by-round music and the progression and why it starts out slow and gets faster and faster?
Well, for a number of reasons. Number one, to keep the action, that, in a true Muay Thai fight, these guys are not throwing 100% in round one. Probably not in the fight at all, because they need to keep that action going. Now, it stems back, and I'm not sure if they still do it. I'm sure they do. Betting-wise, it has to do with betting and purses and things of that nature. These guys need to put on a show and entertain, because that's really what they're getting paid for. So they can't go out and, knockouts are great, but they don't want to go out there and blow their wad and have no gas, have nothing left, and then just get mauled by the other guy, which we see that in a lot of combat sports, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's a win is a great opportunity, but these guys are paid and expected to put on a traditional style fight. And so back to the music, then, therefore, when the music is playing, besides being traditional, the music can be sped up, indicating to the fighters that this is boring, you guys need to pick it up, kind of thing. So there's that that's part of the music there.
That's just fascinating. I especially love the tying into the betting. I could just picture sort of like you get a chance to see the fighters, see their technique. They're not throwing 100%. Nobody's bidding finished, but there's a favorite coming in, and then the betting ramps up, and then they speed it up, and then the tide turns, and then the betting increases the other way. That's cool shit. I like that.
It's pretty smart, to be honest with you, because like I said, you're telling the competitors without saying it to them that, hey, it's you got to pick it up.
I like
it. I'd like to jump in just with a question about the promotion of these events. We've never had one in this area. We do have one coming up. Is it difficult to attract the mainstream public to these events? And how do you do it? How do you go about it?
You know, it shouldn't take too much effort. I mean, other than I'm sure the general advertising that you're doing. I do it with tradition. I mean, speaking of, Skippy brought up the Ramui or Y Crew. I'm not sure if your promotion is going to have that or not, but that's something you may want to educate while the first one's going on, educating the crowds, they understand why is this guy dancing in the ring. It's beautiful, first of all, and there's really two reasons for it. One is more of the Buddhist tradition, asking for the elements of the earth to bless you, and so on and so forth. But there's also something that a lot of people don't really understand is it's a time for the fighter to get in the ring, kick off some of the rust, kick off some of the nerves, understand his or her surroundings, and get comfortable and calm down from the excitement and everything like that. So you get that going, and back to the whole Rambouillet and White Crew, I would definitely make sure that I took time to educate that if your fighters are going to do it so that the crowd understands what's going on. But I think Muay Thai has a following all by itself, and it shouldn't take too much effort advertisement-wise or knowledge-wise.
If I understand correctly, there are different levels of Muay Thai. Like, there's different classes of Muay Thai when you actually go to watch competition. In your promotion, is it the absolute top level, or is there sort of a graduated scale of you could see a couple of different levels? And how does that all work?
Well, the way we do ours is, and everybody does them different. I match my fighters, obviously, on age, you know, weight, experience, all those factors that come into play. But and then, yes, skill level. Do they want to just kickbox? Am I going to put them in Muay Thai? Now, I, as a promoter, I'm young in the promotion world as well, only a couple years in. We have not had full Muay Thai rules, and you are correct, there are different levels. Really, there's kickboxing, and then you pretty much go to modified Muay Thai. Modified Muay Thai basically is knees without elbows. You can still throw them. It's still kickboxing, meaning the kicking and the boxing portion of Muay Thai. And then the ultimate level is then full Thai rules, meaning elbows and everything. So that's the natural progression. Again, every promoter and region may do them a little bit differently, but that's how I've been born and raised.
Now, see, I'm feeling totally ignorant on this topic. You're absolutely blowing my mind with what you're saying. I'm picturing going to an event, and I'm learning all about a culture as well. That appears to be what you're telling me when you're telling me what your shows are involved, and that's exciting as hell to me. I don't think we were even going to come close to that. I wish we would have had Peter on here to talk about his event, but I think we were simply looking at some guys that take Muay Thai classes, and they were going to go in a ring and you know, just do a fight. I don't think there was any of the type of culture that you're talking about involved with the show.
Well, and if you get a chance to bring that culture to the forefront, it's a beautiful thing. You know, these guys, they have some of, depending again on their upbringing, some of them have the beautiful flowered necklaces that are usually made from, well, it could be made from a lot of different people, but many times the fighter's mother or wife or something like that. You've got the Mongkong, which is the headband that you may or may not have seen. And then you've got the padats, which go around the arms, and these are all blessed by Buddhist monks that are giving protection to that area or giving a strength to that area. So there's a lot of, I don't want to call it religious, but for lack of better terminology, religious and historical culture to this. And hopefully you guys will involve a lot of it because it's gorgeous.
I'm getting excited just listening to it. I mean, I can see that attracting a whole new demographic that wouldn't normally go to a combat sport, but would be interested to see the show and the spectacle and the culture that comes with it. I find that exciting as hell. I think that's something that we've really got to look at expanding in this area. What do you think, Boyd?
I agree 100%. And I'm with you, Rick. I was ignorant before. Now that I got this little tiny bit of knowledge, now of course my OCD is going to kick in. I'm going to do nothing but research Muay Thai for the next 6 weeks. I can see that. God damn it!
And you'll have fun at it. You'll have lots of fun learning about it. It's gorgeous.
Unfortunately, I also know Skippy, who I'm sure will be sending me about a million hours of footage that I'm going to have to chew through. The beauty of social media, I'm getting messages popping up on my Facebook page here as we're talking. Somebody is asking me, how much are the tickets? I want to go to this event. So that brings us back around to when you promote your events, about how many people are you getting at your events now 2 years in, and what are your ticket prices, and do you have different levels of prices, and how does that all work sort of on the business side?
From the business standpoint, and again, every promotion is different, and I don't think there's any right or wrong, but this is the way I and my business partners have done it, is we mix it up between both MMA, kickboxing, and Muay Thai. So at our shows, you'll have all of that. And recently, we brought in some submission wrestling. Not very many of those bouts, usually only one or two. And then I personally, we've kind of set the bar, and we're going to start at $25 a ticket, but that means that we will have a minimum of 10 fights or more. I really try to have no less than 12 fights. My last few shows have had 13 or 14 total bouts. So yes, it's escalating. We start at 25 and then we go up if you want ringside, if you want VIP seating areas. And that's kind of where we've started our benchmark. And now as far as crowd, you know, there are multiple promotions in multiple areas in that put on these types of fights, whether it be in a cage or in a ring. And I would say here specifically in Western Washington, you're looking at anywhere, a small show, anywhere from a couple hundred people show up to 2,000 people. Our show is still growing, and I think we get, call it the 1,200 to 1,500 mark each show is what I would put us at. And growing.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Growing.
That is fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Washington market is probably comparable to what we would have here in the Halifax Regional Municipality. We're pulling on probably about a million people, considering we're sort of a center for Atlantic Canada for combat sports right now. So that's a real good goal for us to have in mind. Brian, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to educate us a little bit tonight. And can I please ask you to come on the show with us again, hopefully even next week, because we were really hoping to have the promoter for Fight First, which is the promotion doing the amateur MMA and Muay Thai tonight, but he wasn't able to make it. If we could get him back on, I would love to engage both of you in a conversation so we can start brainstorming around how we can really make this have a successful run in this part of the world.
Absolutely. I'm here. I love this sport. I love, you know, and Skippy and Apaki, all those guys are great. I'm here for you guys. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. I want to give you a minute or two now just to give a shout-out to any sponsors, partners, promote your own gym and promotion. This is a moment for you to sort of benefit your world a little bit.
Well, thanks again for that opportunity. Definitely want to give a shout out to most of our sponsors. Obviously MMA Madhouse, Primal Combat, and Tacoma Fight Shop, Northwest Auto Wraps, Pinky's Plumbing, Sunset Chevrolet, a lot of our sponsors. So thanks for giving me an opportunity to shout out to that. Obviously, our show, going to plug it a little bit, Absolute Cast here in Western Washington, Washington State, that is. And my business partner, Felipe Rivera, and Jay Crochet are wonderful people. I love working with them. And then as far as my fighters and instructors and stuff, I won't make it too long, but I do want to give a shout-out to Marcelo Alonso, Fife Jiu-Jitsu, and Master Sauhin Srisuk. Those guys have helped me get to where I'm at, and I appreciate all the support they've done. So thank you guys one more time.
Thank you so much, sir. Much respect.
Hey, and one quick shout-out, Bully Busters. Follow them, like them, support them.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that. And then I'll wait to hear, and you guys let me know what you want to do for next week or whenever, whatever is convenient.
Awesome. Greatly appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. Bye.
Let the addiction begin.
Yeah, hey, and I want to, dude, one of the sponsors, Western, I think he said Northwest Auto Wraps or Western Auto Wraps, they actually made a 110-foot-long banner with Madhouse on it. I got it sitting right here next to me. It's one of the coolest things I own.
Nice. Now, didn't you say in some cases some of the sponsors actually give out free Muay Thai equipment at Brian's events? Is that right? Hello, Skippy? Rick?
Yeah, that was a great interview, man.
I'm sorry, Rick. I know that he has given out gear thanks to Draco, Impact Sports, and Bushido Mixed Martial Arts. They have donated boxes of gear, which we've given to his gym, and that they've given out to some of the kids in the Bully Buster program.
Super. Rick, that was a pretty cool interview, I got to say.
It was a come-to-Jesus moment for me. I mean, I really sat here and I had visions of what he was talking about, and it's completely different than what I anticipated for an interview. I'm excited. I don't think we're going to that level here right now, but boy, does it ever give us something to work towards. I think it would just be an awesome show.
Yeah, agreed. No matter what they do have in mind for this first one, I'm going to be kind of looking at it with a bit of a different perspective now and see where they come in sort of in the traditional Muay Thai versus kickboxing, what's happening in the cage, and then sort of the whole ceremony and everything around the event. It's going to be cool. I think it's interesting that the two events that we've been talking about the most tonight are the grappling tournament, the submission series 902 in January, and the Muay Thai portion of this Fight First card, because one thing that we've talked about on this show quite a bit before was not only that mixed martial arts grow, but that the individual components of mixed martial arts grow. And so I think it's cool that we got both of these events that are taking place here now, sort of a few months after we talked about that, and we're going to be able to see those events or those sports in their raw form.
Well, I think if one succeeds, they all succeed, and I think they can all help each other. And, Skippy, man, I got to say to you, brother, I mean, you're my hero, man. Like, you do this day in, day out, and, you know, you bring so much positive. Just the fact that you've got that show and you allow us to get on here, and I know we've got some people in this area that listen to the show now, and it helps everybody. So thank you for what you do. You're an ugly bastard, but you do good, man. And we really appreciate the time.
Hey, I'll be honest. This is my favorite show out of all the shows on the Madhouse Radio Network. You guys know from day one I was a fan of yours, Rick, when you were on television, as well as Boyd. And anything I could ever do or anybody at Madhouse can do to help you guys, you know, bring combat sports and the different martial arts to the forefront community, it's easy. I don't mind. It doesn't bother me. And I love doing this show with you guys. And I got to say, Boyd, you were right, man. What a great interview tonight.
Yeah. I mean, that guy was just, it took me from, I mean, it blindsided me. It totally blindsided me. It was not what I was anticipating. Coming into tonight, I wasn't super stoked. I'm exhausted. I was driving and in meetings the entire day. I've been busting my balls trying to pull the show together. Peter, for whatever reason, wasn't able to join us. We weren't able to reach Coach Scott. I was like, frig. And then Brian comes in, and like, I'm just like, I can't wait to get off this call now so I can sit down, ramp up the computer, and start doing some research and watching some Muay Thai video. I mean, he really, really captured my imagination.
Well, and I think something you and Rick will very much enjoy is seeing the traditional Y crew, the dance that each fighter does, because each one's different. Nobody's are the same. Just everything, including, you'll notice, you know, things like the headdressing he was talking about. A fighter cannot take that off. That's bad luck. That's a bad omen. Your trainer has to take that off. Your crew has to take that off your head. You can never go through the ropes. You have to go over. It's disrespectful to go through or under them. I mean, there's so much involved. It's a beautiful sport. It's my all-time favorite sport. Every Friday and Saturday night in Thailand, you can watch all the events live on TV because they broadcast them all over the world, and that's where I'm usually at.
I mean, we have it going on here to a certain degree. I know Gavin's been over, Sago's been over, Coco's been over, but I snap back to crew Mike Malott. I noticed on his last fight he was wearing the traditional headdress, and I'll admit, man, I really didn't know anything about it till now. Now I'm interested. Now I want to know more.
Yeah, and I want to jump back to something you said, Rick, when you thanked Skippy for doing the show. I texted you guys before the show came. I sent you a little Facebook message there, and I said I had an epiphany, and I want to tell you what that is. coming into tonight's show, like I said, I was pretty exhausted, and I wasn't really super looking forward to having to do a podcast tonight. But the moment I started chatting with you guys, and the moment I started feeding off of the energy and the passion and the love that you guys have for mixed martial arts and combat sports, I was like, there is absolutely nothing I would rather be doing right now than sitting here talking to you guys and folks like Crew Brian about this sport that I love. So thank you guys for giving me an opportunity to do this, man. It's awesome.
Oh, the pleasure's ours.
Starting to get a little emotional here. We better wind things up.
Sweet. I am going to get in touch with Peter Martel, the promoter for Fight First, and definitely lock him and a number of his fighters in for next week. We'll probably do a rapid-fire show next week. I'm thinking, Rick, we'll probably try to churn through maybe five or six of these young fighters if we can, and find out a little bit about them and find out a little bit from Peter about what we can expect for this event coming on November 28th.
Yeah, we got to see a little more promotion on this event here, I think. It's been kind of under the radar for whatever reason. We're getting lots of momentum on the 902 submission series. Hopefully this will help pick up a little momentum on that event, and we can showcase some of these people in their first fights and actually give people a taste of Muay Thai.
And if you remember, I pitched on a show quite a while ago that, hey, we got to get these fighters, these young athletes over from Newfoundland, because all the maritime gyms have had their chance of putting their fighters in combat sports promotions in Atlantic Canada for a number of years now. And the guys from Newfoundland, with the exception of Gavin Tucker, who's really a Halifax fighter, haven't had a chance to do that. And I noticed that we got like three, four, possibly even fighters from Newfoundland fighting on this card. So that's super exciting to see as well.
Great. Wrap her up, my friend.
Oh, man. So glad to have gotten an opportunity to do with you guys again this week. Next week, it'll be all about the Fight First event on November 28th. If you train mixed martial arts, if you train martial arts, if you like watching combat sports, please get your ass out to the Olympia Hall in Halifax on November 28th and support these young athletes. And as we always say, Skippy, that's enough BS for one night.
And remember to wear your sunscreen.
Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top quality combat sport equipment tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farm Box Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.